Well, it certainly is a lovely day. I'm so appreciative of your presence this morning. And again, I want to offer an invitation to our visitors that if there's anything that we do this morning that you're curious about why we do it, what the motivation is, and what our biblical explanation is, then we would love to have a Bible study with you. If you're curious about what it means to be a Christian, then we'd love to open up the message of the gospel and read straight from the Bible what it is that God says we must do to please Him and to be with Him when all is said and done in this life. Let's have our Bibles open together to Matthew chapter 12 this morning. I want to study a passage here from Matthew 12. And we'll talk about a very interesting Sabbath snack. We'll go and read the entire story to begin, and then we'll go back and make some applications verse by verse. So pick up here in Matthew 12, verse 1. At that time, Jesus went on the Sabbath through the grain fields, and his disciples became hungry and began to pick the heads of grain and eat. But when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, "Behold, your disciples do what is not lawful to do on a Sabbath." But he said to them in verse 3, "Have you not read what David did when he became hungry, he and his companions, how he entered the house of God, and they ate the consecrated bread which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but for the priests alone? Or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath the priests in the temple break the Sabbath, but are innocent? But I say to you that something greater than the temple is here. But if you had known what this means, 'I desire compassion and not a sacrifice,' you would not have condemned the innocent. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath." Now in verse 9, departing from there, he went into their synagogue, and behold, there was a man with a withered hand. And they questioned him, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" in order that they might accuse him. And he responded in verse 11, "What man shall there be among you who shall have one sheep? And if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will he not take hold of it and lift it out? Of how much more value then is a man than a sheep? So then, it is lawful to do good on the Sabbath." And he said to the man, "Stretch out your hand," and he stretched it out, and it was restored to normal just like the other. But the Pharisees went out and counseled together against him as to how they might destroy him. Now, in order to understand the weight of Jesus' actions and the explanation that he offers on this particular Sabbath, it's important that we understand the background behind this story. And I like the way that Edersheim sums it up in a book called The Life and Times of Jesus the Messiah, which is just one of the great books on understanding the cultural background behind the message of the gospel and the story of Jesus Christ. He had this to say, kind of summing up the approach to the Sabbath day that had been reached at this point in Jewish history. "Where fundamental principles were so directly contrary, that is, when Jesus presented something that was so different than what they expected the Messiah, or that was so different than what they believed at the time, the occasion for conflict could not be long in waiting. Indeed, all that Jesus taught must have seemed to these Pharisees strongly and strangely un-Jewish in cast and direction, even if not in form and words. But chiefly would this be the case in regard to that on which, of all else, the Pharisees laid the most stress, the observance of the Sabbath. On no other subject is rabbinic teaching more painfully minute and more manifestly incongruous to its professed object." Now, what he goes on to explain then is that out of fear of violating the actual law regarding the Sabbath, a number of traditions had been developed over the years, in particular by Jewish leadership and experts in the law, the scribes and the Pharisees. And these traditions, or these oral laws, basically built a hedge around the law. So if the law was this of do not violate the Sabbath, out of fear of violating the Sabbath, they developed all of these oral traditions and these oral laws that said, let's just not even come close to it. Instead of just saying, do not violate the Sabbath, we'll say, do not violate the Sabbath to this degree. Don't even come close to violating the Sabbath. Now, again, at first, that seems like a really noble cause. But when God has stated something to be this way, when He has stated His law to be a specific way, He doesn't need mankind to create a bunch of extra laws to protect His law. It's not like God wrote the law, whether Old Testament, or it's not like God presented the gospel in the New Testament as if there were a bunch of like potholes in it, a bunch of traps and tricks like, you better watch out because that verse right there, that's a getcha. That one will get you if you're not careful with that one. You know, God wrote the law in the Old Testament, and He presented the message of the gospel to His disciples in the New Testament in a way that they might actually understand it, and that it was possible for them to obey it and end up pleasing Him. So while it seems like a noble idea that if God says, don't cross this line, while it seems like a noble idea to say, well, we'll just go and not cross this line over here, you have to understand that's not what God said. He said this line. So there were all of these traditions and laws and customs associated with the Sabbath day. So when the Pharisees say to Him, your disciples are breaking the Sabbath day, what they mean is, your disciples are breaking all of the laws and customs that we've created around the Sabbath day. They're not actually violating the Sabbath day. Let me give you a couple of examples here just to think about here. One example is this, that if a man had a sheaf, that is a bundle of grain that he wanted to move on a Sabbath day, which of course implied a degree of labor, all he had to do was place a common household spoon on top of it. In order to move the spoon, then, he would naturally have to move the sheaf too. And it's things like that where to kind of get around it, you know, well, we're not technically violating the Sabbath day. And I'm always wary of that, by the way, practical application. I'm always wary of people who start all of their sentences with, well, technically, watch out for people who live in the realm of the technically, where everything is a technicality. Everything is a, well, technically, I'm not. Watch out for people like that. Because I don't think there's a lot of genuineness in the world of, well, technically. The true intent behind the Sabbath day had been lost over generations of both misinterpretation and misapplication by Jewish leadership. Adam Clark, in his commentary, writes that in the intertestamental period, that is, between the Old Testament and the New Testament, that 400 years between them, that people who were keeping the Sabbath were so poorly following the true meaning of the Sabbath that they wouldn't even defend themselves from Roman attacks on the Sabbath day. He writes in his commentary, the Jews were so superstitious concerning the observance of the Sabbath that in their wars with Antiochus Epiphanes and the Romans, they thought it a crime even to attempt to defend themselves on the Sabbath. When their enemies observed this, they deferred their operations to that day. It was through this that Pompey was enabled to eventually take Jerusalem. And I wonder, was that the point of the Sabbath day? Was that why God had the Sabbath day enacted? Was that why He commanded them to observe the Sabbath day and keep it holy so that they could be murdered by Romans while they sat there helpless, defenseless by choice? Go to Isaiah 58, verse 13. And this is God's own explanation of the Sabbath day, that if there's any question, if there's any doubt about what the Sabbath day was supposed to mean, what the point behind the Sabbath day was, Isaiah 58 gives us a perfect divine explanation. Go to Isaiah chapter 58 and consider in verse 13. If because of the Sabbath you turn your foot from doing your own pleasure on my holy day, emphasis on from doing your own pleasure on the Sabbath day, on the holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy day of the Lord honorable, and you shall honor it, desisting from your own ways, from seeking your own pleasure, and speaking your own word, then you will take delight in the Lord. So in God's own words to the prophet Isaiah, what's the point of the Sabbath day? Is the point of the Sabbath day to go, okay, I've taken one step, two steps, three steps, and that's all I'm allowed? Is the point of the Sabbath day to weigh out, well, I don't know, the clicker is how many ounces and I'm only allowed to move it so far and this many ounces? What was the point of the Sabbath day according to Isaiah 58? To desist from your own pleasure and make it a holy day for God. That's what the point of the Sabbath day was, to desist from your own pleasure and make it a holy day for God. It's not your day, it's God's day. And that has nothing to do with counting the number of steps you end up taking by the end of the day. And that has everything to do with saying, I'm not worried about my own comforts, my own pleasures, my own business. I am worried about making this a holy day for God, to serve God, to love God, to worship Him, to adore Him. And if I see somebody hurt, I'm going to help him. One thing also, a couple other traditions on the Sabbath day, they'd reached a point where you were not allowed to clean a wound on the Sabbath day. If a barrel sprung a leak in it, if a cask, a wooden barrel sprung a leak in it, you were not allowed to drip a little bit of wax on the leak in order to stop it from leaking out on the Sabbath day. That was how far they had taken the Sabbath day. So when the Pharisees saw Jesus' disciples picking a few grain heads along the road, which, by the way, was lawful, they were allowed to do that according to Deuteronomy 23, verse 25. When they saw them crushing a few grain heads, the Pharisees didn't even see it as just one violation of the law. Every component of it was actually seen as a violation. Picking the grain heads themselves was considered reaping. Going like this was considered threshing and crushing. If you threw something behind you, you know, the leftovers over your shoulder, every single part of the process was considered its own individual violation of the Sabbath day. So let's get back into our story then. Behold, your disciples do what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. Let's correct them now just as Jesus corrects them. The disciples were not breaking the Sabbath. Period. The disciples were not breaking the Sabbath. And if anybody has any doubts about that, well, I don't know, technically maybe they were. Jesus goes on to say in unequivocal terms in verse 7 that if you understood what the law was all about, you would not have condemned the, what's the word he uses there in verse 7? You would not have condemned the innocent. You would not have condemned the innocent. Unequivocally, Jesus declares his disciples to be innocent of breaking the Sabbath day. And that's a point that we need to bring out. Have you ever heard the term situation ethics? Situation ethics is the idea that right and wrong are kind of elastic. You can stretch right and wrong, you can bend right and wrong, depending on what the situation calls for. And something that might have been right yesterday is wrong today because the circumstances have changed a little bit. Where we can kind of set aside God's commandments in order to fulfill some need of the moment. This isn't situation ethics, because the disciples weren't violating the Sabbath day. They were, in Jesus' own words, innocent. I should have had this up, by the way, if you want to follow along on the screen as well as on your Bible there. So Jesus proceeds to bring up an example from the story of the Old Testament, from David's story, that he wants them to remember. And by the way, they would have remembered it. When he asks them, have you not read? I don't think Jesus is being rude or sarcastic or anything, but that's a little nod to, you guys have read this. You know what I'm talking about. Have you not read is an indication that you have already read it. You know what this story is. Have you not read what David did when he became hungry, he and his companions, how he entered the house of God and they ate the consecrated bread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those with him, but for the priests alone. Let's emphasize another point here before I move on. The disciples of Jesus were innocent, and he calls them innocent. They were not breaking the Sabbath law by breaking a few grain heads in their hand and having a snack while they walked along the road. What does Jesus say about David, though? Was he innocent? No. And again, that's a point that needs to be made in any kind of conversation along Matthew 12, situation ethics. In any conversation along those lines, Jesus says his disciples were innocent, but he calls David what it was. He calls a spade a spade. It was not lawful for him to eat. It was not lawful for him to eat. It was just as unlawful for David to eat that showbread as it was for Nadab and Abihu to offer strange fire. It was just as unlawful for David to eat that bread as it was for Uzzah to touch the ark. It was just as unlawful for David to eat that showbread as any other actual violation of the law. Jesus is very clear about that. It was not lawful for him to eat. Now, for background here, we don't have time to study this story today, but you can read in 1 Samuel chapter 21, in particular verses 3 through 6, what the story is that Jesus is talking about. While David is fleeing from King Saul, he comes to the sanctuary and he finds the priests there and he asks them if they have any provisions that he and his men can take along the way. And by the way, David does lie to them. When they ask him what he's up to, he says he's on some kind of a mission right now, which he's not really on a mission. He's just running away from Saul because Saul wants to kill him. So it's not like everything about this story is on the up and up, right? It's not like everything that David did was on the up and up from the beginning. He lied. He ate showbread that was not lawful for him to eat. And at the end of the day, what was the result? Not at the end of that specific day, but at the end of the story, what was the result? Doeg ended up coming and killing almost all of those priests. So this story isn't even on the up and up anyway. So if you're looking at 1 Samuel 21 as the great example of situation ethics, you're just not going to find it there. It just doesn't measure up in terms of what someone might be looking for with that ulterior motive. Now, it was a violation for David to eat that showbread. So why does Jesus bring it up? Why does Jesus bring up the story altogether? Is Jesus trying to justify what David did? Is Jesus trying to point out that what David did was worse than what his disciples did? So you should leave my disciples alone? Is that what Jesus is up to right now? Well, I've got a take on this that I think is kind of provides an explanation for that. And I'll start by saying this, that I don't believe Jesus is trying to justify David at all. In fact, when you look at the history of the Pharisees and the doctrines that they taught and their theology, the Pharisees actually taught situation ethics and used the story of David and the showbread to justify it. They actually went to that story to say, see, it's okay to set aside an unimportant law of God in order for a more important thing. That the need of the moment, David's survival, was more important than obeying a piddly little commandment from God. The Pharisees actually used that story to justify their own situation ethics so that when they set aside a commandment of God, such as we read in Matthew chapter 15, right? And that whole thing about you don't have to honor father and mother if you want to devote some of your money to the temple service or give it to God. Right? They set aside commandments of God purposefully, knowingly, intentionally for their own human traditions and doctrines. And they used the story of 1 Samuel 21 as their proof text for situation ethics. So I believe Jesus brings up David in order to point out you use an actual violation of the law to justify your violation of the law. You use an actual sin to justify your sin, while at the same time you're accusing my disciples of breaking the law when they haven't actually broken the law. He's trying to point out to the Pharisees their hypocrisy, that you will, for convenience sake, you will justify your own sins by looking at the story of David, but you won't give any leeway to my disciples who have not actually sinned. They've not actually violated anything. But you'll walk all over the story of David in 1 Samuel 21 as if it's the be-all, end-all story that justifies your treatment of the law. They were situation ethicists, and Jesus was trying to point that out to them. And if you understood the law, if you understood Hosea 6, verse 6, which is what he's quoting here, if you understood that I desire compassion and not a sacrifice, then you would not have condemned the innocent. you wouldn't have condemned the innocent. So why does he bring up Hosea 6, verse 6? And again, I think it's easily misapplied. Somebody might look at Hosea 6, verse 6, or Micah 6, Amos 6. You might look at some of those Old Testament passages that seem to be saying, from God's perspective, I just want you to have a good motive, but I don't really care what you do. You can take those passages and twist them around and misapply them to come to that conclusion. God doesn't care about specific obedience as long as your motive is right. I just want the heart. I want the spirit. I want you to feel compassion and I want you to love, but I don't really care about how that comes out. And I think Jesus would respond the same way to people like that. If you really understood what that meant, if you really understood what it meant when God told you to have compassion and not sacrifice, then you wouldn't be condemning people who are actually innocent. Now, when God says through the prophets, and when Jesus quotes from Hosea, I desire compassion and not sacrifice, he's not saying the sacrifice is unimportant. What he's saying is, I desire the spirit, I desire the compassion, I desire the motive and the desire. And if you have compassion, and if you have spirit, and if you have the desire, if you love God, how will that manifest itself? In a disregard for the law or in obedience? If you really love God, how will that manifest itself? In obedience. Plain and simple. God doesn't have to go out of his way to command the sacrifice without compassion, because what good is sacrifice without compassion? What good is obedience without motive? It's worth nothing. And so when he says, I desire compassion, not sacrifice, what he's saying is, I desire compassion and everything that comes with that, and not sacrifice that is empty obedience, or sacrifice that's in pretense, or sacrifice that's on your terms. So here we go back to this whole Sabbath thing. If the Sabbath day was a 1-acre plot of grass, and God said, don't violate the Sabbath day. What the Pharisees did was they created 12 or 15 or 20 or however many fences, barbed wire fences, cement block fences, a moat with water in it, and crocodiles, and alligators, because they're different, and they put a minefield around it as well. And they said, see, now we're obeying the Sabbath. But I desire compassion and not sacrifice. And the thing is, when you create a hedge around God's laws, when you have put up fences and a moat with alligators and a minefield around the Sabbath day, nobody is ever actually celebrating the Sabbath day. You can't even get to it anymore. You can't even touch the Sabbath day. Out of fear of violating it, they made it impossible to even experience it. You missed the whole point of the Sabbath day. They missed the whole point of it. And the great irony of this story is, that we'll notice at the end of the story, the great irony of the story is, they will accuse the disciples of breaking the Sabbath day for this, having a little snack. But what does the very last verse of our story say? They spent their Sabbath day doing what? Plotting Jesus' death. I desire compassion and not sacrifice. Okay, so the Pharisees thought they were keeping the Sabbath day. And they were being very careful, very nitpicky about it. But what were they actually doing on the Sabbath day? Plotting someone's murder. And the Pharisee didn't even get it. They didn't even see the irony behind that. They were incapable of seeing the irony of what they were doing with their Sabbath day. Here's Jesus telling his disciples, oh, you're hungry? Just have a little snack. The law says you're allowed to take a few handfuls of grains as you're walking by someone's field. What's he doing with his Sabbath day? He's going to the synagogue and giving a man his hand back. Changing a man's life. And what are they doing? whining and complaining and finding a dark room in the back of the building, in the back of the synagogue where they can plot a man's murder. So Jesus says, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. And I do like that. And again, I don't think that he's trying to be sarcastic or mean or anything, but there is an element to that statement that to me says, don't mess with me. There's no outsmarting Jesus. There's no being cute and clever with Jesus. When it comes to Jesus, you don't get to outsmart him on things like the Sabbath day, or the law, or the Ten Commandments, or sacrifices, or quoting the prophets like Hosea or Isaiah. There's no outsmarting Jesus. Why? Because he invented the Sabbath. He invented the Sabbath. In a lot of ways, the ministry of Jesus plays out almost like one of those episodes of, what was that show, Undercover Boss? Remember that show? I don't think that's on anymore. But where the CEO or the president of a company, a big company, right? Like a well-known company, he would go out to some location, some In-N-Out Burger or something from his company, and he'd dress up in an In-N-Out outfit, and he'd go and he'd learn how to be a fry cook or something. And people were completely unaware, even though there's always clues, like, you know, we're watching the show and we're going like, come on. Yeah, that's clearly the CEO of the company. Come on. No, you know, no, nobody's that bad at being a fry cook. Come on. But sometimes the ministry of Jesus sort of plays out like that, where the Pharisees think like, we're the real experts here. We're the ones who understand the Sabbath day. We've got this whole Sabbath day thing figured out. And here's Jesus over here, living the life of a human being, even though he is the Son of God, all the fullness of deity dwelling in bodily form, and he's going, I invented the Sabbath. You don't outsmart the one who invented the Sabbath day. I am Lord of the Sabbath. So he goes on into their synagogue, and they ask him a question now. And you almost wonder if this was some kind of a plant, right? Like they knew that the man with the withered hand was going to be that day. Not that he is a plant. I'm just saying that this situation just almost seems like the Pharisees, they set it up. They tailor-made this situation, like in John chapter 8 with the woman caught in adultery. That whole story is fishy, right? That whole story is as fishy as a marketplace in Seattle, Washington. But this story seems fishy also, doesn't it? He enters their synagogue, and lo and behold, there's a man with a withered hand, a man whose hand has been deformed since birth, and they've got this question locked, loaded, and ready to fire. So Jesus, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? And look, we just happen to have someone right here in our synagogue who sure could use some healing right now. Look at how sad he is. His hands all tucked away like that. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? In order that they might accuse him, because Jesus is not going to be outsmarted in this situation or any other. So he immediately turns it back on them. I love the teaching of Jesus, by the way. There's a lot we can learn about how Jesus teaches. Jesus will frequently respond to a question with a question. And that, you know, that's the classic case of when you know people are setting you up, don't take the bait. Flip it around on them. Okay, that's fair. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? That's a good question. But let me ask you something. If there was any man among you who had just one sheep, right? One precious sheep. No other sheep to spare, right? You don't have any extra sheep. You have one sheep. And if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath day, and you're there at the edge of the pit listening to it, bleeding for help, begging, it's looking up at you, you are its only savior, you are its only hope. What man among you is going to leave it there overnight? In the cold? Possibly injured? In danger? Wolves and coyotes and other creatures? What man among you will not reach down to that pit and rescue that sheep? Wow. And I think we're all sensitive enough. We're all sensitive enough that we know that the appeal here to compassion is very strong. There's an appeal to compassion here that even the Pharisees with their hard hearts can't seem to bring themselves to answer it, right? Jesus is very good at this, where he pushes a situation upon them where now they're the ones who look bad either way. I mean, if they answer, well, it's best to just leave it overnight and probably it will get eaten by wolves. Or, well, it's best to violate the Sabbath day and rescue it. Oh, now you're the ones violating the Sabbath. That's interesting, Pharisee. That's an interesting response. Jesus knows. They think they're going to trap him. Well, he's got them in the trap now. Now, how much more important is a man than a sheep? How much more important is a man and his ability to take care of himself? In an age where there wasn't an advanced welfare system like we have today, where there wasn't Social Security, where the man probably didn't have a very well-developed network of safety. This man was probably struggling in life. How much more important is bringing to that man the ability to take care of himself, to feed himself, to work, to defend himself in times of danger? How much more important is that? And the dignity that comes along with that as well. And the dignity. How much more important is that than a sheep that falls into a pit? And Pharisees, you're the ones who have a problem with me? Stretch out your hand. Go on. Stretch out your hand. And the Pharisee didn't get it. A man's life has been changed. The Son of God has clarified to them the true meaning of the Sabbath day. Probably most people in that synagogue that day went away very impressed. But a few of them huddled in a dark room somewhere in the back, and in hushed tones said, somebody's got to take care of this Jesus guy. Jesus is Lord of the Sabbath, not them. They didn't even get it. They had no clue. Let's be careful in our own lives then, to not find ourselves as clueless as the Pharisees. What does God desire from us? Is it compassion or is it sacrifice? Is it love or is it obedience? Or do we put ourselves into a corner when we think those things are mutually exclusive? What is God looking for from us? But to show the true meaning of the gospel, not just in form, but in substance. The true meaning of the gospel, not just in a message, but in how it's lived out. Lived in all of our daily lives to show the true meaning of what God's commandments are. Not because we're afraid of God, not because we don't want to go to hell, but because we love God and desire so earnestly to go to heaven and be with Him. The Pharisees didn't get it. Do we? Whatever spiritual need you might have this morning, please let it be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.